and welcome to episode 46 of Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson. We've got three segments for you today. Kicking things off, we have Neil and Carmine talking about the EA Summer Showcase. Carmine was there and got a chance to play a lot of the upcoming Wii U EA games. After that, myself, Neil, Zach, and Mike sit down to talk about Mario Fatigue. We just have too many Mario games right now. After the outro, there's a bonus segment about dinosaurs. That's with Zach and myself. Enjoy!
So we're going to talk about EA and Wii U. Carmine, who's with me, he got to go to EA's, their Redwood Shores campus to go check out some Wii U stuff, right?
Yeah, but unfortunately they didn't have the demo set up for me to design a FemShep or anything, so no news on that front, I'm afraid.
It's like for the Wii U, we completely cut out female Shepard.
No! Okay,
that would be terrible.
I don't think that's what happened.
No, that's not it. But before we get to talking about the three games that will be out at launch, are they confirmed for launch?
I believe that Mass Effect 3 and FIFA are confirmed for launch. Madden, I think, they haven't, to my knowledge, they haven't committed to a date.
Yeah, I think Madden's one of those games that's just kind of that nebulous holiday, and so it'll probably be out at launch or shortly after, but it's probably... I mean, that was the one game that wasn't playable in any way, shape, or form, so that's probably a good indication of why it's not set for launch right away. Well, I feel like it'd be appropriate to kind of discuss how John Riccitiello, the CEO of EA, I believe that's his title, he was at Nintendo's press conference in E3 2011 when they revealed the Wii U. And it seemed from there that EA was going to have what he called an unprecedented partnership. I'm just going to read a quote from when he came on stage. He discussed about how Nintendo's new system could broaden, new gameplay horizons, such as a football game where you could call the plays on the tablet, which is happening in Madden, or a shooter like Battlefield that would have, wonderful graphics and smooth character animations on Nintendo's breakthrough controller. And then they talk about, the online functionality that will allow you to download new content, find matches, compete on leaderboards, et cetera, et cetera. And oddly hints at the Miiverse by talking about how this community would extend to mobile social networks and the web. And the final quote is kind of, I guess, it feels weird now after seeing what EA has, and that's Riccitiello said at E3 2011, "Over the past months, we've been telling our employees and consumers that EA is undergoing a transformation. We're changing games from a thing that you buy to a place that you go. Nintendo's next console is truly transformational as well. A better platform than we've ever been offered by Nintendo. Deeper online capability, and all of it driven by an unprecedented partnership between Nintendo and Electronic Arts."
And this was E3 2011. That was a long time ago. What? One and a half years now?
Yep.
Wow. All so, right. I wonder what that last thing about it was. I suppose he said something about a cross mobile or cross, social multi-platform stuff. Was he talking about Nintendo or was he talking about EA's own personal thing, like Origin?
It seemed like maybe both. There was an interesting rumor that's been kind of circulating. Right now I'm looking at a Reddit thread that maybe we'll put in the show notes for this episode that goes over this whole, I guess, I don't even think it's a conspiracy theory because it seemed, I've heard it from several places. But basically, as of E3 2011, EA was working closely with Nintendo, supposedly, on the online infrastructure for Wii U. That came from the Wii games that had online capabilities were generally pretty solid. I mean, I never played the Medal of Honor game, but it had 32-player online, and it worked great from what I heard. Nintendo couldn't even get Brawl to work right. But supposedly, EA and Nintendo were fit. They were thick as thieves. They received early dev kits, and they were working with them on the online infrastructure, and everything was looking great. Miiverse was coming together, and supposedly there was a meeting in Japan with, I think maybe Peter Moore, maybe Riccitiello, some semblance of those EA bigwigs, went to Kyoto, and they were talking to Nintendo, and supposedly EA kind of was like, well, we want you to be a part of Origin. We want the Wii U to... the online infrastructure to be a part of Origin, which is EA's Steam competitor. And apparently, supposedly Nintendo kind of considered this, but ultimately they didn't do it. And I guess EA felt burned. And if you kind of look at the almost lack of EA at E3. I mean, there was a throwaway mention of Mass Effect 3. And then how what we're getting at launch are, you know, the two token sports games and Mass Effect 3. It seems like EA backed off tremendously from the Wii U.
Yeah, it's a really interesting rumor because I almost want to believe, you know, want to believe that something like that happened, because something must have happened from going from E3 2011, where you have the CEO of EA say unprecedented partnership, and to a Nintendo fan, this is manna from heaven. This is, oh my God, we're finally getting parity with other consoles. This is exactly what we want.
Yep.
And then now we're coming up to the Wii U launch, and if you compare like Wii U support, the Wii, I think I checked recently at launch, it had Madden and Need for Speed.
Yeah, and so I would say the Wii U support actually seems stronger than the Wii support.
Yeah, we've got three games instead of two. We've got Mass Effect, you know, and instead of Need for Speed, we switched out to FIFA. So, I mean, it's better, but it's not exactly this thing that I'd call unprecedented, you know?
Yeah, especially since Mass Effect 3 is a port of a game that came out in January. I mean, I know both of us are looking forward to that because neither of us have really played Mass Effect, so...
Yes, and it showed at the event because I was just bombing.
I played Mass Effect 3 at an EA event before it came out on 360 and PS3 and kind of did the same thing. And, like, I mean, the world seems cool. It's just that I haven't played any of those games, so I'm looking forward to playing 3 when it hits Wii U. But before we get there, basically it seems like if this rumor's true and looking at the support that we're getting from EA at launch, and the kind of, I guess, quietness on the future, it looks like they're going to treat it the same way they treated the Wii, which was with, you know, the occasional bone every now and then, you know, your Boom Blocks or your Tiger Woods, but pretty much not really too much of anything.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I'm obviously, as a fan, I'm hoping for better than the Wii, and I define that by ports, you know. I'm not... Right now, I'm at the point where if I can get to parity... with other consoles, I'm happy, because I only own a Wii. So that's why I never got to play Mass Effect. I consider that more of a console experience than a PC. So I really wanted to play it on a console, and I've been waiting all this time. So I'm happy to get it. It's a year late, so obviously I'm, you know, part of a smaller group of people. But if we can get ports, if we can get ports of Mass Effect, if we can get ports of... BioShock, please. You know, that's what I want.
I believe, I mean, that's a different company, but I think BioShock Infinite is looking like it's going to be a Wii U game. I don't know, there's been a lot of rumors.
I was thinking Dead Space, I'm sorry.
Okay. Dead Space, I'll dream. I'm not too hopeful in all honesty. I think there was something from Visceral where they straight up said, like, no. That's
painful.
Not in the works. Yeah.
Yeah, the point I want to climb to. We've got a lot of ground to make up. I think Nintendo has a lot of ground to make up for in third-party support. And they already said they're not going to compete, you know, with buying exclusives.
Yeah.
So.
And, I mean, that's something that Microsoft seems to excel in.
Yeah. So, I mean, as a fan, I'm hoping, well, I want to be optimistic. I want to say, okay, look, we've got Mass Effect. Maybe going down the line, we'll get ports.
Yeah, I mean... This rumor, and also the fact that we are getting Mass Effect, BioWare has never really done much of anything on a Nintendo platform, and the rumor or the word is that they're pretty excited to actually have that chance, because I guess it's just Wii was such a technical downgrade from what they were doing, you know, with your Mass Effects and your Dragon Ages and the like, but now it looks like Wii U, you know, will probably see Dragon Age 3 as well. So, I mean, at least we're getting BioWare support, although I'm not totally into their games, so that doesn't excite me too much.
Well, I'd like to be able to play their games first so that I can know. So I'm happy for the chance. And yes, I mean, looking at the change from Wii to Wii U, I do get the sense that this unprecedented partnership, whatever it was going to be, is not going to turn out that way. You know, I think we've still got mountains to climb as Nintendo fans looking for third-party support. I'm hoping for something better, but right now, this doesn't point that it's going to be a great improvement, at least just EA. And, of course, we don't know a lot about, they're still very quiet about stuff.
So, I mean, just what were your general feelings on the event? Did it seem like there was a good vibe, a good buzz about the Wii U games that were there, or was it just kind of ignored for other stuff that was at the event?
You know, I think it was a little bit ignored. And, I mean, of course, I'm saying this as someone who, you know, is Nintendo-focused on a Nintendo-focused independent fan site. But I get the sense that there's a lot of hunger out there for news on these games. And even if there's not a lot of news, there is news there that deserves coverage.
Yep.
And when we talked about FIFA, you know, that got picked up a little bit. And when we did an interview with Matt Fryer from EA on FIFA, that got picked up. And I was a little surprised that there wasn't a lot. Maybe there was, but I didn't see a lot of other places talk about FIFA, talk about, you know,
in
depth about what that experience was. Because that was, honestly, I played that demo twice. It was fun, you know, and there were other people playing it. Maybe the thing was the other people playing it, there was a bunch of people who you wouldn't see running to Mass Effect 3 Leviathan. Maybe that was all the hardcore people went there, and they never got to check out the little FIFA corner. So
yeah,
I think there was not as much coverage as there could have been.
I know, I'm usually at those EA events. I'm the junkie by the EA Sports games. That's just generally because I like Madden. I guess before we get to the games that you have more to say about, how does Madden look in your eyes as someone who probably doesn't give a crap about that game?
You know what? I think, well, here's, Madden was at the event, but it wasn't on the floor. It wasn't playable. So really, if you check out EA's live stream of the event, that's all the Madden that most of us got to see. And they didn't talk about it that much. Basically, and I'm looking at my notes here, they talked about basic gamepad features, you know.
Yeah, like play calling and the like.
Yeah, play calling and then rerouting people dynamically, which was cool, but they really didn't go into the meat of the game. So it's hard to come away from that with a sense of what the game really is. But, and the only sense I got coming out of it is that I wonder if, and this is a personal theory of mine, I wonder if this is not going to make launch. I wonder if they're taking the extra time maybe to get two gamepad support. You know, I think that
maybe.
That, I don't understand Madden without two gamepad support. You know,
yeah.
On the NES, I'd play Tecmo Bowl, and the way you did shows your plays, because you can see each other's team plays there, is you have to secretly enter an up, a down, an A, B code on your controller, and the other player, of course, can't look at it. And unless you can enter a code secretly...
Well, they actually have the function in, I guess, modern Madden games that you can kind of, like, bluff a play call. Like, if you, like, hold down a button combination, like, you'll basically go over a play, like, hold down a button combination, and it'll select that play. And then you go and, like, pick a play, and then you'll go off the screen, and you could bluff that.
Okay. I can see how that works.
There are ways around it, but it's not as elegant as each person having their own little screen, which, in all honesty, excites me a whole lot about Madden.
Is
that potential?
Yeah, and I think that's my takeaway from Madden, is that, you know what, the game, in the sense that I can tell you what the game is like, it wasn't there. I'm just hoping that it's not there because... they're doing a lot more with it than what we've seen.
Yeah, and I guess this is some sort of connectivity exclusive, but from talking to the Madden PR rep following the event, I did find out that it will be playable in my neck of the woods in, I think, like September or something like that, I guess for their fall showcase.
So you have something to look forward to.
Yeah, because if you haven't been able to tell by our coverage of the Madden games on Wii, I've been in contact with people at Tiburon about the Madden the Madden games on Nintendo systems, and when we found out about this event, I found out shortly before it that it wasn't going to be playable, but that it was going to be playable in the fall. So I guess it kind of works out in the grand scheme of things. But let's move on to the other games. Which do you want to talk about next, FIFA or Mass Effect 3?
Let's get Mass Effect 3 out of the way, because I think I'll gush about FIFA.
So, I mean, this is a port of a game that when it comes out will be about, I guess, 7 months old. I guess, first off, do you think that there's any reason that they've laid out on a fact sheet or anything that would make someone who has already played through the game want to pick up the Wii U version?
I don't really think so. I mean, it feels like a port, okay? It feels like they went to the event and they said, here's Mass Effect 3, you know, and obviously this version, it includes a lot of DLC, and it has touchscreen support, so it's not a bad proposition.
It'll have the controversial, the ending DLC, and I think there might be another DLC pack that might be included.
Yes, I believe so, and then I think that, it has the extended cut, it has multiplayer, you know, and of course it has that, interactive comic backstory thing that will get you through Mass Effect 1 and 2, so you'll have context going into the game.
Yeah, it's like the same thing that was on Mass Effect 2 and on the PS3, except for it covers two games instead of one.
Mm-hmm. And I just feel that the touchscreen stuff is nice, because you have a map, you know, and you have some touch stuff, and then of course you can play it just on the gamepad. So I think these are nice features.
That is very sexy.
I will play a lot of games like that, and it's interesting. I'll get an HD system, and I'll end up playing on the non-HD gamepad.
See, because that's the one thing about that, I mean, just the gamepad as, I guess, like a device as itself, is that there are buttons on it, therefore it beats the iPad. I don't care if I can only play it in the comfort of my living room or some kind of radius from the system, but because it's not like I'm going to be, like, on the streets playing my iPad. I don't have one, so it's all in theory, but...
Well, I have a 3DS, and I end up playing that a ton in bed, so...
Yeah, same here, and... I mean, if I can just throw a gamepad next to my bed, play some Mass Effect 3 before I go to sleep in bed without having to look up at a TV, that'd be kind of wonderful.
We should title a bunch of, like, articles, like, game title in bed. We should have, like, a series.
That is brilliant. You guys heard it here first. It's going down.
So, basically, I think the sad thing is, though, these are great features to add to it, but if you've played it before, I have a hard time recommending that you buy it, because from the sense I get and from what I know of the game, it's a port, and they're exposing it to a new audience, but there's nothing there that's really like, oh, exclusive DLC feature, something like this, you know. And,
It kind of goes back to what people were saying about Batman, is around E3, you heard a lot of game journalists, you know, people that are playing every game that's coming out, kind of like, oh, if you already played Batman, or if you wanted to play Batman Arkham City, you would have already played it. And I kind of took an impromptu survey of people that I know as gamers and a lot of people from our staff. And I asked them, do you want to play Batman? Have you played it? And most of the answers were, yes, I do want to play it. And no, I haven't yet. I'm looking forward to the Wii U version.
Yes. So I think, I mean, who knows how big that population is, but just between the two of us, we already know we have people who haven't played these games who want to play them on Nintendo consoles.
Yep.
There's a market and fans, you know, hardcore fans at the least. Just rabid for these types of games, at least amongst our readers.
Yes, that's very true. I know that Mass Effect 3, it might not be an immediate launch purchase for me, but that is a game that I'll probably pick up on the Wii U at some point.
Oh, no, it's a day one purchase for me, but it's going to be painful because I can't handle dual analog.
You have to learn. Either that, or maybe you can just hope that every game will have a Wii Remote and Nunchuk option.
Yeah, but unfortunately Mass Effect 3 won't, so.
Yeah. And you can play that with a Pro Controller, right?
Yes, you can.
Cool.
I believe so. But yes, you can.
That is pretty nice. So now let's get to the big show, the FIFA game, which, according to you, it seems like it's amazing. So do tell, what makes it so amazing?
It's a really subtle change because the fact is, talking to the person there handling the demo, it's, a lot of it is basically, the FIFA game on the other consoles. If you wanted to play it just like that, you can. If you want to just play it on the TV with a Wii U Gamepad Pro, a Wii U Controller Pro, Pro Controller, whatever, you can. So, I mean, at a basic level, there's not actually any ridiculously new features on the Wii U. In fact, it's even missing like one or two like slight, super in-depth features of the other games, because at one point, I think in January, they had to branch off the development because they couldn't, you know, they had to say, okay, the Wii U code is here and we just can't bring anything else.
I believe Ultimate Team isn't in it, and I think there might be another mode.
I think there's small things like first touch controls about how a player doesn't control the ball as well when they first get it if it's like moving quickly. So small things like that.
Basically, stuff that to us neophyte soccer game players don't really care.
Yeah, stuff I had to ask them to explain to me because I heard the word and I didn't understand it. But that said, the fact that you've got this with a touch screen on the Wii U gamepad is absolutely, I think it's a game changer for this game because it just exposes all these features in such a, in a much more powerful way. And it allows for a much more in-depth manager mode, a much more easier to control manager mode, which I think is going to expose this. I mean, if you drag your, like, I intend to drag my dad in and and have him play, and in the manager mode, you can handle all these overhead, large bird's eye view strategic decisions, and you don't actually have to play an individual controller. But if
That's
you look at the Wii
awesome.
U gamepad, yeah, but if you look at the Wii U gamepad, you can still interact with it at any time because you can touch, you can look at it from like a top-down radar sort of view of the field and you can touch a player and drag a line and then they will go out like that. It almost becomes like a touch screen RTS soccer game thing and it is so easy. It's amazing. I was watching another person playing, this woman and she was just playing like that, you know. She would just play like that. She'd touch, she'd drag a player and then she'd try to drag all the players to attack. So I think it just really opens up this game. It's a sports game and sports games are very intimidating. And I'm not a big, you know, sports game person, but I went back for this because just having that touchscreen there, I felt like, you know, if I wanted to, I could sit back and I could watch it or I could jump in the game and someone else could use it and we could interact. And another thing is that gamepad with someone using that to move players in real time and set up plays and be strategic like that is just going to be amazing in multiplayer. That's what I think.
Yeah. So the way this works is that like you have like you could be playing with the gamepad and you'd be kind of looking between the TV and the touchscreen at the same time.
It's a little confusing at first. But yes, you could usually you'll choose one, like I'll look up at the TV and I'll have the gamepad in my hand and I'll be controlling a player, and I could glance down at the touchscreen and quickly just touch a player and drag to just get him into position, maybe. I think once you get used to it, it's easy to just glance down, touch, and drag.
Yeah.
Maybe just a 2-second sequence there. And there's another thing where you can just shake the gamepad, or I think there's another button you can press, and briefly the gamepad becomes a view of the goal.
Oh.
So you just quickly tap where in that goal you want to aim for it with a shot.
They had something like that in the 3DS version, I remember from playing the demo at E3 about a year and a half ago, so my memory might not be too good, but it was something where, like, you shoot at the goal and you just tap on the touchscreen to pick a corner of the goal to shoot it into.
Yeah, but, I mean, this is great because when you shoot with a goal pressing A, I just couldn't get it down, and you don't really have the ability to aim. So
yeah.
Just bringing that up and tapping quick, I felt so much more in control of what I was
That's
doing.
Awesome. And then you can also play this with just the Pro Controller, right?
Yeah. And you can play it with the Wii Remote, of course.
Oh, cool.
But everything will be, like, crunched down. You won't have access to a lot of features.
And it is the kind of thing where, like, I could be playing as one player using, you know, the Wii Remote or the Pro Controller, and then someone's on the gamepad kind of controlling everyone else, right?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome. And then, of course, they didn't have it at the event, but they told me there was going to be online. They showed off the friend tab that was non-functional, but we got to talk about that.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, that's pretty good news, the messaging system for in-game. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not a football fan, but I had a lot of fun with this. So I guess we'll have to see what happens when it does come out and we can look at the final game, but I'm pretty excited about it already. It sort of crept onto my top launch games list that I'm trying to trim down.
I think you and I combined might end up with every frigging game that comes out on Wii U with the exception of Game Party Champions.
I don't know. Not recommended except for Chiron, so.
Well, it was great talking to you about the EA stuff. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing more of each of the games, even Mass Effect 3, where I feel like it's already a known commodity.
Yeah, and I mean, it's really interesting going back to that rumor. I have mixed feelings because I'm sad that we don't have, if that rumor again is true, but I'm sad that we don't have that unprecedented partnership. But if EA was asking for Origins there, I know that Origins has sort of a shaky reputation, at least amongst some people I know online. So it sounds like Nintendo, I don't know if I'd be happier with an all Origins online or without. It's sort of a harsh sticking point.
I feel like we traded in EA and got Ubisoft, because it seems like they replaced EA's unprecedented partnership. All right, well, thank you very much, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you guys soon.
Hello everybody, and welcome to this segment of Connectivity. My name is Scott Thompson. I'm joined today by Neil Ronahan.
Hi!
Haven't heard that one in a while. Zach Miller.
Which segment of Connectivity?
This one.
Okay, this one, right here.
Yes, and Mike Sklens.
Hello.
Hello. Mike, when was the last time you were on Connectivity?
I don't know. I had a friend visiting from Japan for the last 2 weeks, so I've been kind of wrapped up.
Was it Baker?
Yes, it was Baker.
Oh, I remember Baker.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
I got a lot of street passes from his Japanese DS. He completed the pink sections of, like, two whole puzzle panels for me, one of the big ones and one of the small ones.
Yeah.
Nice.
And I got really far in Find Me, because by the time he was done, he was at level 7.
Yeah, that's not the crack I had at level 7. It's weird. I'm coming off of visiting Zach up in Alaska. I went on an Alaskan cruise and then spent some days in Anchorage. And when Zach and I street passed, my me just showed up as a generic me from the United States.
With question marks as a name.
We have no idea what's up with that. I think it might be on his end because Aaron's me also displayed on the friends list in the same manner.
But he can see me.
Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah, maybe like parental settings are set like super high or something. Like you're just worried the guy's going to be a walking penis or something. So.
Well, I think that would be on their end, right?
Well, no, so you can't see it, so you're protected.
Yeah.
Anywho, sidetrack aside, today we're going to be talking about Mario Fatigue. Over the weekend, I wrote a little editorial about the recent Mario games within the past 7 years, I think I said it at, from the release of New Super Mario Bros. When I wrote up a news story earlier in the week about the multiplayer mode in New Super Mario Bros. 2 almost getting cut out entirely because the team didn't think they'd have enough time to implement it. There's a lot of comments just, you know, about Nintendo being lazy and hating multiplayer and just being behind the times. And there were a few kind of talking about just too much Mario right now and how they're not really interested in this game. And it kind of echoed something I felt after this E3 when we had two new Mario 2D platformers.
And then
announced.
Another Mario game with Paper Mario. And then the other 3DS game shown was Luigi's Mansion.
Yes.
Well, Luigi's Mansion, we can exclude that. It's a Mario character, but it's not.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, it's the kind of thing where I see it if people complain about Mario Fatigue and they include it, as long as they don't focus too heavily on it, because it's still, like, a Mario series title.
I guess.
Right.
It's no more so than Mario Tennis, if you ask me.
Well, then it's no more so than Paper Mario, either.
Well, see, that's the thing. I had to set the stop somewhere. Otherwise, yeah, you just go down a rabbit hole where you're like, oh my god, there's a Mario in pretty much every game on these platforms. So I tried to keep it to just the traditional platformers, whether 3D or 2D. And so what it came out to was there were 7 Mario games released in the past 7 years, you know, by the end of this year anyway. And so I didn't think it was that there was too much Mario. I thought that it was the quality of the Mario games that could be the problem, and specifically with the new Super Mario Bros. Games.
See, I already take a little issue with that because I mean, if you look at stuff like, you know, your Super Mario Brothers 1, 2, 3, and then what you were including, Land and World, in your sample segment, was Land 2 in that or no?
No, it was just outside the year range. It did come out, like, in the 8th year, but I was keeping it to 7 just to keep it comparable.
I mean, the thing is like, with Super Mario Brothers 1 to 2, I mean, well, 1 and 2 in Japan are virtually the same kind of game, almost like a new Super Mario Brothers 1 to new Super Mario Brothers 2 kind of thing.
Yes.
And then the USA version was originally a different game, so that's a little weird, although that did change up the formula a whole lot.
Yeah.
And my thing is that, in all honesty, I feel like a lot of the, I guess, the hate about how, oh, the new Mario games are so easy comes from the fact that, hey, we've been playing these games for like 15, 20 years. I mean, when we first played Super Mario Brothers, it was probably the hardest thing in the world because we never really played video games before then. And it's still a challenging game, don't get me wrong. But when you're coming at that from years of experience with video games and Mario games, and you go and play new Super Mario Brothers DS, yeah, of course the game's going to be easier.
Well, and to me, if I can jump in, it's ease, I don't think, is the complaint for most people. I mean, I don't think it's a problem with the games being too easy. It's that they're too samey. I mean, they're just so similar from game to game.
Yeah.
Then, I mean, in all honesty, like, what's the gigantic difference from Super Mario Brothers 1 to 3? I mean, like, there are definitely improvements, but
there's a really big difference between Super Mario 1 and 3.
Graphically, yes.
No, Super Mario 1, you can jump, and you get a fireball, and you can use a mushroom. That's it. It's, like, the most bare-bones mechanics. And 3, you've got, like, a whole bunch of different power-ups. You can fly. They've gotten way more inventive with the level design.
Level select screen. You can attack.
Yeah, there's a map on there's the whole map. You know, there's the, like, things like the P-Wing and all these bonus stages. And even, like, the little end of the level has the game where you hit the block and get the icon.
Yeah.
It's evolved. It's an entirely different Mario game.
Devil's Advocate played. I mean, Super Mario World, the Super Mario Brothers 3, there's definitely less of an improvement, or at least, I guess, less of a change in their world.
Agreed.
I guess you have Yoshi and the Secret Exits, which,
you could see them being a whole evolution of the level design in Super Mario Brothers 3, though, because those levels tended to have some branching paths.
Yeah.
Yeah, the jump from 3 to World is not as big as the jump from 1 to 3.
Yeah.
But still...
And they also overlap each other in development, I think. Or that might... No, that's just when they came out in North America.
Well, no, you're thinking, because they came up, like, 2 years apart in North America, whereas it was, like...
I think it was 3. Well, actually, no, I think it was still only 2 in Japan. World came out a year earlier in Japan.
I think you're right. I just looked at it this weekend, I should know, but I think you're right. I think it was 88 and 90 in Japan, and 89 and 91 in America. And yeah, I agree that the jump between those two isn't as drastic, but there's still a big difference there. And I think playing 3 and World are still a different experience. I don't think you can just sit down and play 2 as both of them as well. I guess what I'm saying is, like, you can't just be like playing Super Mario World and then just jump straight to Super Mario 3 and play quite as well as you were. Like, I think it's still a little bit of a difference in, like, learning curve and stuff.
Agreed. The physics are a little different in World.
Now, if we were to think as, like, the new Super Mario Brothers game, the three of them is kind of, you know, put the similar graphical style aside, because I think that while that is an issue, it's not a major, like, I think that's something that people get hung up on, because the graphical...
The bigger complaint is the art style itself.
I think that's, like, from game to game, that it would be nice if it was different, but it's not. Yeah, but as far as like from 1 to Wii to 2, do you guys see kind of like a gameplay shift or any kind of new additions that make the series better?
To me, the only real inclusion that really changed things was the 4-player multiplayer. That I think was kind of groundbreaking, especially in terms of playing cooperatively at the same time. Versus, you know, traditionally it's always been, you know, one person goes and the other person goes. But apart from that, not really.
It's really just new suits in each game.
I mean, the thing that really kind of kills me is how Yoshi's used in Wii. I mean, especially, let's just even compare that to Super Mario World. Super Mario World, you can rock Yoshi in almost every single level. In Wii.
Except for castles.
Yeah. And ghost houses.
Yeah.
But in Wii, you can just use him in the level that you find him in, and then you just bail, and you're like, later, Yoshi, we'll see you next time I replay this level.
Right, which is so bizarre because he's all over, like, the box art and everything. Like, he was, like the big pull for this game. And then they kind of half-assed it and, like, didn't want to design every level to work with him.
Yeah.
Whereas in World, every level was, like, developed with the possibility that you would have Yoshi. Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing is where, I guess disclosure, I'm working on the review for New Super Mario Bros. 2, so I've been playing a little bit of that. And the thing that I think that does a lot better than especially the previous two New Super Mario Bros. Games is that that does kind of have that cohesion of powers where you can, you know, take the raccoon tail into every level, and usually you can find secret shit because of that. And I would say that the addition of the kind of bullshit carrot on the stick of all the coins to collect does add something kind of significant to the game, because I'm exploring a lot more nooks and crannies now, even after I get the star coins, just because in some cases it's just fun to find the places, and then there's usually a big old coin reward at the end, and there's that kind of high score mechanic that it'd be great if there were online leaderboards, but...
I would have rather they put online leaderboards than a kind of half-assed multiplayer.
I agree.
Neil, have you had a...
In a way, leaderboards are a multiplayer aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Neil, have you had a chance to check out the multiplayer? Probably not.
No, I have not.
Danny and Dan hadn't either.
I think Danny and James Charlton are going to try it this weekend.
Okay, cool. But, the big thing, too, is while the New Super Mario Bros. Games are kind of content just to sort of just rehash themselves with maybe the inclusion of a new power-up each game, we've had the Galaxy series... and then New Super Mario 3, or not New Super, Super Mario 3D Land to a lesser extent, like really innovating and providing, a lot of like creative, and new ways to play as Mario.
Yeah, obviously 3D Land came out very recently, but when we're talking about Mario fatigue, I almost don't even really think about it because it was so good and it was so like fresh and new and it was like really perfect in a lot of ways. I don't feel like it really contributes as much to this fatigue. It feels like what all it really does to me is all Mario 3D Land does is it highlights how much worse New Super Mario Brothers is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like this giant yellow highlighter that runs right over it and like, look how awesome I am and look how shit all this other stuff is. It makes the other franchise appear weaker in comparison just by its mere existence.
Right.
You know what's kind of ridiculous about this whole situation, too, is that it's fatigue on kind of a small scale. Because if you do kind of back it up a little bit, you know, you have, at least from, I guess, a 2D perspective, you have New Super Mario Bros. DS was the first new Mario platformer in over a decade.
Right.
Or I guess 2D platformer. And then New Super Mario Bros. Wii came out 3 years later. And then what's really the sticking point is that we had 3D Land, which was kind of the hybrid 2D, 3D, came out last year. And then we have two new Super Mario Bros. Games this year.
This year is the real kicker.
We wouldn't even have this discussion if it was just like New Super Mario Bros. U or New Super Mario Bros. 2 just came out next year. Like, that's the kind of thing, is that it's so avoidable to just, like, take another year with the 3DS one. But I guess in Nintendo's minds, it's kind of like they need to make bank really quickly. And in all honesty, this is a surefire way to do it. And unfortunately, that means they're creatively going to suffer a little bit.
Yeah, you know, and even without, if you canceled one of them entirely, like if they kept New Super Mario Bros. U, and instead of New Super Mario Bros. 2, we got like Mario 3D Land 2, nobody would be complaining there either.
Yeah.
Right. But I
think it's just that we have two games from the weakest Mario franchise at this point.
Yep.
Yeah, coming out within basically a few months of each other.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll get their side-scrolling Mario out for a good long while, and we can just see off the walls bonker to shit for the rest of the system's lives.
That's something I wanted to ask you guys about, too, because in the comments to my article, I think a few people pointed out that this theory that, well, this is it. Like, you're going to get one 2D platformer for each console. You just happen to be getting them both, like, sort of right here this year, and then this is going to be it until, the 4DS or the Wii U 2 signed by Bono.
In all honesty, I will make a bold prediction here. There will be another new Super Mario Brothers game for one of the systems before the end of the generation.
I don't think that's that bold. I mean,
no, I don't think
one
so
of the
either.
Systems is about a year old and the other will be literally like brand new the day it comes out. There's plenty of time for at least one more of this franchise to come out on one of them.
if not more. I was really surprised by
looking at least 5 years.
I was really surprised, like, people like, no, this is Nintendo's, you know, this is it. They're just getting it out of their system, and then we're going to move on, and in 6 years, we'll come back to the series. And I do not see that being the case.
It'll be at least 3 years, I think.
Yeah. I don't think we'll get one right away.
Yeah.
But
I would wager 5.
I think what we'll probably see is, because I don't know how well you guys are versed about the development of New Super Mario Bros. 2. Basically, New Super Mario Bros. U, that is the A-team. That is the same team that worked on DS and Wii. And I don't know, I think some of them, some of the people who worked on 3D Land and Mario Kart 7, along with, like, two basically, like, rookies, they're working on New Super Mario Bros. 2. When they had the Iwata-esque, we found out the director of this game, his first thing that he did was less than 10 years ago, he worked on, like, the gameplay videos for Super Mario Bros. 3 on Game Boy Advance.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, this is a young buck. But I think what'll probably happen is that after New Super Mario Bros. 2, they're going to do the DLC levels. And after that, I hope that Nintendo kind of gives them the keys to the car. And it's just like, all right, have fun, take 2 years, and make a sequel to New Super Mario Bros. 2, but kind of go off the rails a little bit. If that's something that happens, that would be great.
Or just make something else that goes off the rails.
Make New Wario Brothers 2 and have it be what this game should have been in the first place.
They could do New Super Wario.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. That'll come out eventually, I think.
In all honesty, like, I would love to see that. And that's something that makes sense. Hopefully it makes sense to Nintendo, too.
I just want to see him experiment with the art.
Yeah. Yoshi's Island, but actually good. I mean, the original Yoshi's Island is great. The DS one, I don't like.
Not the DS. Yeah, the DS one wasn't great.
Yeah, but if New Super Mario Bros. U looked exactly like Yoshi's Island, like if it had that art style, would we be complaining then?
No.
It's the exact same game.
That is the kind of ridiculous thing in the graphical style, which is why I made that comment earlier, because it is the kind of thing where people are so negative about that style that they just get so negative about the game.
I don't think it's the style. I think it's the fact that the style hasn't changed. I mean, I know we've reached a point where it's like, I mean, those older Mario games, it was all also a benefit of figuring out the current hardware or being able to develop on new hardware that allowed them, you know, the graphics to change from game to game. And I understand that that's not really where we're at now. We've kind of, you know, for the most part, reached as far as we're going to go probably in terms of 2D platformers. But the fact that they just don't differentiate them at all, and not just visually, but recycle the music, is just kind of inexcusable.
Yeah, it makes the whole franchise cheap.
I read somewhere that, someone theorized that Nintendo is just trolling everyone because every song has the ridiculous, like, the ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba.
Yeah, I mean,
they have, like the harmony of sheep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, the style, you know, the style does affect your opinion of the game. It has to. I mean, it's a big component of what the game is, and it just, the problem with the style is they've shot for nostalgic and reminiscent, and it sure sells a shitload of video games to do that.
Yep.
But it's, to me, what it signals as boring and uninnovative.
It's just sort of sterile at this point.
Yeah, it sends this message to me that says, I am exactly what you think I am, and I am nothing more.
Right, and I don't want to be anything more.
I'm
not really reaching too high, just kind of like walking.
Right.
Is 3D Land at the same time is extremely classic looking. It's got this real classic style. They bring back a lot of classic elements, like, you know, the raccoon suit and the tanuki suit. And it looks really classic, but at the same time, somehow, it looks really fresh, and that's not just because of the 3D, because even if you turn the 3D off, it just has this, it takes this classic style, and it puts this vibrant, like, twist. It simplifies it down a little more, it makes it pop a little more, and it comes out looking a lot better, whereas this is, like, almost just like a photocopy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm coming at it from a unique perspective, because I basically spent last weekend romping through 3D Land for the second time to get all the beat it with Mario and Luigi and get the gold flagpoles. So
beat that last level yet?
Nah, I haven't. I tried a couple more times, but then I got New Super Mario Bros. 2 and started playing that. And that's what it is I'm basically, I have this direct comparison of 3D Land to New Super Mario Bros. 2, and it is, like you said, Mike, it's just 3D Land is such a breath of fresh air, And that's part of the reason why, from when I first played that game at E3 2 years ago, that like I just kind of fell in love with that idea, because it's just so, it's so new but familiar. And I mean, New Super Mario Bros. 2, while I'm having a great time with it, it's just like, I feel like I've been here before. It just feels like the same old shit, maybe with a different hat, and like some of the levels are pretty damn inventive, but it's still like, I've seen all this shit before.
The thing with it is, they, you know, with Super Mario 3D Land, what they did was they kind of emulated Mario 3.
Yeah.
And with the new series, they're emulating Mario 1, and the problem with that is Mario 1 is clearly the worst one, artistically speaking. Like, I mean, obviously it had the worst graphics, but not just that, it also has the worst art style in general. Because it's just, they didn't have, you know, they didn't put as much production into it. Yeah. You know, it was built from limitations, and as a result, it doesn't look as good, and when you pick something to emulate, why would you pick the worst looking one? You could, they could have done a 2D game exactly like this and styled it after Mario 3, and it would have looked a lot better, because that's, you know, it wouldn't have looked like 3D Land, it would just look like a 2D version of Mario 3 running on, you know, current hardware, basically. Though I will give him credit that U does seem to be borrowing at least a little bit of style from Super Mario World.
And I think that's the kind of thing where U could succeed very well, is if they do kind of go a little more world-like as opposed to just the Super Mario Brothers games.
Yeah, and I am a little interested in it. I'm interested in U. But I think I'm only really interested in you because I only played my friend's copy of New Super Mario Brothers. I beat it, but I only played it, you know, I borrowed it from a friend and beat it in like a weekend. I didn't play the Wii version at all, except I maybe played like an hour of it, like with a friend. And I'm not going to play 2, I have zero interest in it, so I might get you. Like, I haven't really played most of these games because they haven't attracted me, but I think this one might be my breaking point.
But, I mean, at least from playing both of the games from E3 demos and, you know, New Super Mario Brothers 2 in retail final form, U still is way more interesting. I mean, graphically, it actually looks like kind of a leap forward, at least in the backgrounds are way, way better looking and more interesting to look at. And I mean, it does have that HD sheen. But yeah, I mean, the magic that I experienced was, even at E3, I didn't really find it too engaging, but I went to one of those Wii U experience events in New York, and I went with two of my friends, and we had a fucking ball playing the multiplayer in that. And I kind of forgot how much fun that New Super Mario Bros. Wii was with four players, something that any of the other platformers I've played with four players doesn't really capture as much. And I think that has to do with the kind of familiarity of the Mario series compared to, like, you know, if I throw Rayman in front of a friend of mine and they haven't really played a Rayman game, there's that disconnection where Mario
is learning
Mario.
Curve.
Yeah.
And I mean, with New Super Mario Bros. U, adding the silly little gamepad stuff, it's kind of dumb. But at the same time, like, it's just that layer of interaction where you can just mess with each other, and it's awesome.
But one thing I wrote about, too, in my editorial was the fact that I find that the whole New Super Mario Bros. Series to be kind of purposely withholding. I actually compared it to, like, a really long Metroid game where with each entry in the series, you kind of get back one familiar item that you're used to in Mario games. You know, it's like New Super Mario Bros., okay, you know, it's great. It's a throwback. And then with Wii, you get Yoshi back, and now in 2, you get the ability to fly again. You know, it's just kind of like, I know they kind of wanted to, it's like a relaunch of Super Mario Brothers in general, like a rebirth. But I just don't know why they couldn't start from where they left off and then build upon it.
I agree. I do have this to say though, is that it seems like too, at least from where I am at the second world, it looks like it's a big step up from the DS game. And I think that if you have kind of skipped the series in the past, maybe keep an eye out on this one, see what people have to say, which it seems to be all over the board. But I've been enjoying it a lot, and I think it's, you know, it's better than DS. It's probably on the same level as Wii, in my opinion.
Wow. Yeah. Well, yeah, it might be worth looking into. And now, for a counterpoint, last week Danny and Don were on, and they both kind of were down on the game.
Yeah.
So.
Well, maybe, like, it falls off a cliff after the third world.
Well, yeah, maybe it just gets a bit...
Or maybe it just doesn't get any better.
Yeah.
Maybe it just stays the same.
Yeah, I'll be interested to read your review once you've completed the game.
Should be probably out by the time you hear this.
There you go. So I guess to wrap things up, maybe we can just go around and, I mean, what do you guys think? Too much Mario? Are you sick of 2D Mario? Are you sick of Mario games in general right now? I mean, what's your feeling on everything?
I guess I'd have to say not really, because I mean, with the exception of the DS one, which is a game that I played through and then never touched again to the point that I just straight up gave it to my niece when I gave her my DSi. You know, I loved Wii. I love Super Mario 3D Land. I love the Galaxy games. I'm really enjoying 2. I'm looking forward to you. And, I mean, my thing is that, like, I'm not really feeling too fatigued with it. I wish there were more variety in Nintendo's lineup, because it seems like it's very Mario-heavy. Mm-hmm. But every game that I've played, I've kind of enjoyed. So, I mean, even Mario Tennis Open was a bit lackluster, but at the same time, it was still a very fun game. So, I'm on board as long as the games don't get shitty.
So, a ringing endorsement from Neil Ronay. I think that can be a box quote. Every game I've played, I've kind of enjoyed.
And I'll keep playing these until they get shitty.
Yeah. So, keep on feeding them to me.
Yeah.
Zach, how do you feel?
I really want them to, I want them to put some effort into these games.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like they're really, they've been playing it safe for a really long time with this new Super Mario Brothers, series, and you just don't see the inventiveness of the Galaxy games or 3D Land or even Super Mario World. You just don't see it in these new Super Mario Brothers games. And that's what I miss.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. I really want them to go somewhere with it, somewhere they haven't necessarily gone before.
Yeah, and I mean, that's something we haven't really touched on, whether or not they've just taken 2D platformers as far as they can, but I don't really think that's the case. I mean, playing Epic Yarn and Rayman Origins and stuff like that, I mean, I think there's still things they can do.
Oh, yes.
If they're willing. What about you, Mike?
You know, I'm not gonna play most of them, just cause I'm not interested in them. And kinda, I guess like Zach, I sort of think, or I guess I wish they would make them better, but more, it bothers me that there are development teams working on these games when these teams could be working on something a little more interesting. Not necessarily be it a Mario game, just, you know, that it could be something else, some brand new IP, or like a reboot of something old that, you know, like something like Kid Icarus Uprising, like, you know, which kinda came out of nowhere, like, let's reboot this ancient franchise. You know, they're playing it safe not only with Mario games, but they're playing it safe in general with development of games, and I kind of wish they would just, you know, flesh out a little bit more.
Yeah. And that was another comment on my article, was that someone was saying that, well, this is their effort just to, like, kind of fill up the coffers a little bit so they can go out and, like,
and it's
make something new.
Given their financial situation with the 3DS, they need some more cash, and this will definitely do it. So I hope that I will be optimistic, and I'll hope it leads to some better games down the line with the money generated from these.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of an unfortunate reality of them falling on hard times financially is that this has to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, they play conservatively now.
I mean, if you're looking for an answer as to why we're getting 2 new Super Mario Bros. Games in 1 year, that's it.
Yeah.
It's a different topic for a different time, and I don't really want to talk about it now, but just to leave you with a little something, why isn't there Wii Sports U? Just something
Scott,
to think about.
The answer? Not. We're not ready.
It's called Nintendo Land.
Yeah, in all honesty, it is. That'll be if they post another year of losses, Wii Sports U will be coming out alongside Wii Sports 3DS.
Yeah, exactly. They're too much the same. All right. Well, I guess that'll do it. So thanks a lot, guys, for being here.
Of course!
Was that your Bane voice?
That was my Phil Theobald as Bane voice.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's what it feels like.
Scott, you're a detective now. You're not allowed to believe in coincidences.
I'm just going to use that. Whenever anyone's like something about a rumor, I'll just reply with that.
Well, you even did that in our staff email, and I thought
that was really
funny.
That was the thing is, like, I just saw that, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do this.
Awesome. Well, that'll do it, guys. All right. See you guys later.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. All right, and that will do it for episode 46 of Connectivity. You guys know the routine by now. If you'd like to send us some listener mail, you can always do that at connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. If you get a chance to rate and review us on iTunes, that would be great. And you should follow us on Twitter. Go to nintendoworldreport.com, and on the right side of the page, you'll find the Twitter sidebar. Just click there, and you can find all of our handles. All right, we'll see you next week.
and welcome to this bonus segment of Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson, and today I'm joined by Zachary Miller.
Hi.
And we are going to be talking about dinosaurs.
What?
Yes, that's correct. Zach finally got his dream come true here. Since none of us other Connectivity staff would come up with any questions about dinosaurs for Zach or help him in any way with a segment about dinosaurs, he went to the forums and got some great questions from you, the listener, and he's going to answer them here. And I will read them.
Go for it.
So I've got 5 questions here from you guys, and then 1 question of my own.
It's like Radio Trivia Podcast.
Exactly. So let's start with number 1. This is from Fatty the Hutt, and he says, what the heck happened to the good old brontosaurus? Is that still a recognized dinosaur, or is it all brachiosaur or apatosaurus now or whatnot?
Apatosaurus.
Apatosaurus, thank you.
Indeed. Well, I can tell you right now that brontosaurus actually never existed. It is, the reason it never existed is it is a redundant name. What happened with that is that, Lord, let me think here for a second. Apatosaurus was discovered in 1877. It's a sauropod dinosaur. It was discovered by Othniel Marsh, and he gave it the name Apatosaurus, which means headless lizard, because he didn't find the skull. And then he later found, just a few years later, he found a more complete specimen. He thought it represented a new animal, and he called it Brontosaurus. Almost 30 years went by. Those two animals were both being recognized, but a fellow named Elmer Riggs reexamined both of them in 1903. I believe he was working on a sauropod monograph at the time. He said they're different species, but they're under the same genus. They're both Apatosaurus. And the reason we use Apatosaurus instead of Brontosaurus is because you always use the first name given. So,
sure.
In Brontosaurus was named second to the same animal, so the name goes back to the original name, which is Apatosaurus.
Right, like the original guy who identified it.
Yeah. Okay. And Brachiosaurus is a completely different kind of sauropod. It's a brachiosaur, and it's a more vertical sauropod than Apatosaurus, which is a little more horizontal. So that's that. There is no Brontosaurus. There never has been. And I'm not really sure why the popular press still uses Brontosaurus. Now, here is one interesting thing. The name, there's a real interesting paleontologist named Bob Bakker, who you've probably seen if you've ever watched dinosaur documentaries. He's got a huge beard. He's got a straw hat on all the time. And he really likes the name Brontosaurus.
Yeah.
So he's trying to bring it back to a kind of newly discovered sauropod. Well, not really new. It's from 1994. But it's a very fragmentary sauropod, and he tried to give it the name Eobrontosaurus, because you can't use a name that has been invalidated.
Okay.
So it's off the table, but he's putting the phrase Eo in front of it, which just means dawn. it's a very questionable naming, and probably won't withstand any kind of scrutiny, but he's trying to bring it back.
Okay, just because he loves that word, huh?
Loves that name.
All right, well, moving on to the second question. This is from Bustin98. Does the fossil record show the evolution of the eye socket?
Oh, I knew you were going to bring that one up. No, not really. The early evolution of the skeleton is hindered by the fact that early bones were not ossified. The earliest skeletons were cartilage, like sharks have. And that doesn't fossilize. But I can speculate a bit and say that in sharks and earlier kinds of or more primitive kinds of fish that have just a cartilage skeleton, the first bony structure or cartilage structure was to protect the brain case. And everything else was just kind of in the meat. So you can suppose that because the eyes are connected to the brain by a optic nerve that the eye socket was originally for, you know, a hole in that brain case where the optic nerve went through.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually the, you know, it fit the whole eye, the more the skeleton ossified.
Okay.
So that's there just speculation, but it's, I like to think it's informed speculation.
I think so. This next question is from Sarek. Let's see. Is all coloring made up, or is there proof of coloring? If so, what is it?
There is some proof of coloration in dinosaurs. Only feathered dinosaurs, though. And that is because if you preserve a feather really well in the fossil record, if you have really good conditions like ash fall or crushed under, you know, if an animal falls to the bottom of a lagoon and then is quickly buried by sediment and then just it piles on over time and crushes it absolutely flat, you get a very well-preserved feather. And feathers derive their color from the shapes of cells called melanosomes that just kind of make them up. And if you compare the melanosome shape of very well-preserved fossil dinosaurs that have color or have feathers to living bird feathers, you can figure out what color the fossil feathers are. Is that making sense so far?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So there have been three dino birds who have gotten this coloration treatment. One is an actual non-avian dinosaur called Sinoceropteryx, and it's a bit like those compies from Jurassic Park 2.
Yeah.
But it has feathers. It has little chick fuzz all over its body. And it had alternating white and kind of light red stripes down its tail, which is where the feathers are best preserved. The other one is Archaeopteryx. Everyone knows Archaeopteryx. It's the first bird. And its feathers were iridescent like a magpie. Do you have magpies where you live, Scott?
I don't think so.
Okay, well, they're kind of like crows or ravens, but they have really long tail feathers and kind of white, black, and iridescent blue. They're real pretty. I don't know of any other iridescent birds off the top of my head. But we have them all over the place here in Anchorage. But it's kind of a black with a bluish or greenish sheen. And then finally there's a real dino bird related to raptor dinosaurs called a troodontid, and it's named Anchiornis. And it has feather coloration like a woodpecker, mostly black and white with white speckles all over the wings and a kind of a red crown on its head of red feathers. So a lot like the woodpeckers we have up here, and I imagine other places too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's three examples, and I know that other fossil birds are being investigated for other coloration.
And then as far as the dinosaurs without feathers, then I guess it's just a matter of, you know, kind of dressing them up like in greens and browns like current-day lizards. And
yeah, total guesswork.
Yeah, okay. Makes sense. All right, moving on then. We have Shaman. And his question is, what's the biggest misconception the layman has about dinosaurs?
Oh, that is a good question. The biggest? Okay.
Like, what's the thing you hear and you're just like, you fucking moron?
People always ask me if Jurassic Park is possible, and it's not. But the biggest misconception probably, oh, God. Really, anything about Jurassic Park. I mean, Jurassic Park got a lot of things right, but man, oh man, it for all the things it got right, it got about three or four things wrong. And if it was me personally, I get really sick of seeing dinosaurs on, you know, documentaries or in art or popular art where the carnivorous dinosaurs have bunny hands, you know, like zombie hands. And the raptors in Jurassic Park have that too. And it's, you know, we've known this since the early 1980s. No carnivorous dinosaur could hold its hands like that. The easy answer is raptors, T-Rex, all of them, they could hold a basketball, but they can't dribble it. And I don't know how that artistic meme stays in the public consciousness, because it's been disproven since the 80s, and it really bugs me whenever I see it.
So you're saying they should have more movement in their arms? They shouldn't just keep their arms kind of hunched up, like elbows to their sides?
They can do that, sure, but they shouldn't have bunny hands. Their hands should face each other.
Oh, okay.
Their palms should face each other.
Oh, I see.
They
okay.
weren't able to do a bunny hand posture.
Okay, yeah.
And you still see that today. It just bugs the hell out of me. But the other one maybe is that birds are dinosaurs, and people are starting to get that. It's taking a while, because it's kind of a radical concept when you think about it. Like, dinosaurs are extinct, except birds are dinosaurs. So I see a lot of people surprised. They're still surprised when I tell them that, you know, that turkey you're eating for Thanksgiving is a dinosaur. And they're
right.
like, what? and they don't know what I mean. But I guess that's it. It's okay. Those two.
Okay. And then my question for you is, which is your favorite Jurassic Park movie?
Oh, Lord. The first one. The first one, because I saw it when I was 10, and it blew my mind. And like I said, you know, back in 1993, they did get a lot of stuff right. And, you know, it's the only Jurassic Park movie that really... gets across the awe of dinosaurs. You know, the first time you see that Brachiosaurus, you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, but there's nothing like that in 2 or 3. 3 is just a stupid monster movie.
3 is bad.
3 is awful. In 2, you know, they start having it with that very first scene with the Stegosaurus, when the Stegosaurus walked past, and you're like, that's awesome. But then the Stegosaurus immediately attack people.
Yeah.
And then it's a monster movie again.
Yeah.
So that really bugs me about the second one.
Well, they even had the little, you just mentioned the compies. Is that what it was?
Yeah, the compies.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, their whole motive in the movie is just to gang up on people and kill them.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Maybe that's how they hunted, but yeah, it does make it, there's no like awe or like wonder. It is very much like you said, like,
yeah,
like a monster movie.
Now they're currently writing a script for a fourth movie, which is either going to be a reboot or the start of a new trilogy. And I'm very worried about it.
You know, it's been long enough that they probably could get away with just rebooting it and starting over.
I mean, they need to start putting feathers on their raptors.
Right.
And there are so many more cooler dinosaurs they could use now. Like, you know, everyone loves Triceratops, but friggin' Cosmoceratops had 15 horns on its head. And, you know, things like that. You could really show people some new stuff. I mean,
yeah.
Everybody knows Triceratops and T-Rex and Stegosaurus, but there are some really freaking cool dinosaurs out there that nobody knows about because they don't get any press time. So I'd like to see that. My favorite, did you see that horrible Disney dinosaur movie with the CG dinosaurs?
I didn't, actually.
You should watch it, because the first 5 minutes are great, and then the movie turns into shit. But the bad guy, air quotes, of that movie is a carnivorous dinosaur called Carnotaurus, and it's my favorite dinosaur. And I was so happy to see it, because it's not T-Rex.
Right.
And it's a dinosaur that, it's so cool looking. It's got this bulldog head and big bull horns and spikes all over its body, and it's real, and nobody knew what it was until that movie. So there's so many opportunities you could use in the new Jurassic Park. You could friggin' educate people about these animals. You don't just
right.
have to show them a monster movie.
And that's what was great about the first one, like you said, is it was very educational. I mean, it did introduce you to a lot of dinosaurs you didn't know about.
Yeah.
I mean, I think even, like, raptors at that point weren't,
Yeah, they weren't part of the public consciousness.
Right. They weren't, like, a household name.
No.
You know? I mean, yeah, those great movies. I just, if they do reboot the series, I just hope that Jeff Goldblum can still be a part of it.
Oh, yes.
That's my one
Somehow, just ham, wedge him in there somehow.
Have him be the new crazy doctor who, like, built the island. And...
Ooh, that's a good idea. I like
just
that.
Something. Something.
Yeah. Meanwhile, he's turning into a fly very slowly.
Yeah. Or he's just turning into a compy very slowly.
Prehistoric fly. There, yeah.
Yeah. It turns out he's actually the mosquito that has the DNA inside of him. Boom. You're
welcome,
Hollywood.
That's the twist.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that will do it for Dino Chat here on Connectivity. Zach, I'm sure we'll want to do this more and more. So if you out there have dinosaur questions, you can always send them to Connectivity at NintendoWorldReport.com. And, yeah, maybe we'll do it again in the future if there's enough dino interest out there.
Hell yeah. Well, thanks for doing this with me, Scott.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. All right. We'll see you guys later.
Bye, folks.